We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am your host, as always. And joining me are my guys, Tyler and Alex. Tyler, we'll start with you, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm a little under the weather. I got my booster injection yesterday, and then I also had to do a TB test. So I got stuck with a needle then. That's all for UTI. So, you know, whatever. It just seemed like everyone was trying to take jabs at me yesterday.
Well done. Well done. I hope you're feeling better and certainly doing better tomorrow. And happy birthday to Galadriel, man. She turned one year old earlier this week, right?
Yeah, she's 1 year old now. I've just really enjoyed watching my wiener grow the past year.
Off to a great start tonight, my man. I appreciate it. Alex is here as well, man. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Happy birthday to Ganondorf. You know, 1 year ago, came into our lives right at that time. I think 2 years ago, you guys started the first ever Chargers podcast, which, you know, we've come to know. So very excited to be here.
Yeah, first mascot, at least for sure. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love you guys so much, man. I appreciate that. I'm glad that I have two co-hosts who actually have a sense of humor. So, you know, it's a great time around here. So, of course, we have a fun show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to talk about the signings of Morgan Fox and Zach Bailey. More so the Morgan Fox, Zach Bailey, of course, you know, a lesser signing, but still important and still worthy of mentioning. And then we are going to talk about, you know, our projections for this rookie class in terms of, you know, what kind of roles could we expect? What kind of statistics might we, you know, see them put up and all things like that. So this is essentially going to put the bow on our draft coverage, and we will kind of, you know, really have a good time, you know, talking about those players. So first and foremost, we have to mention the Chargers' decision to sign defensive lineman Morgan Fox. This is, of course, something that Tyler had heard was in the works, you know, a few weeks ago. And then, you know, this week it kind of escalated with the Morgan Fox situation. So, Tyler, why don't you kind of take it off here, your initial reaction to how we got to this point, and what are your kind of initial thoughts of Morgan Fox's addition?
Yeah, so I knew, oh, there's Ganondorf. I knew there was a 10th body that was going to be added. I just didn't know, is it a starter? Is it a depth guy? And I guess technically we don't know yet with Fox. I knew that was going to happen about, or it was starting to happen about last week. And then you started, well, Sebastian Joseph Day posted those eye emojis And then you started to piece together that it was basically Morgan Fox. I couldn't think of who else it would have been. And then the night before they announced it, there was, you know, communication here and there. And it did strongly suggest that it was going to be Morgan Fox. And it turned out to be Morgan Fox, obviously. This is huge for the Chargers, both in the micro and macro. Micro, you know, small-ish scale, although it's big for some players. They have good depth. They have a nice pass rusher. They have a guy who can play all over. To me, this is someone who's, at worst, more than your Joe Gaziano, more than your Christian Covington, a guy who can play all over for you, but, you know, can do a lot of things. At least he's a good pass rusher, good depth. In the macro, and the biggest thing, and look, people have their theories about how the roster is organized and run, and some people feel that, and maybe it's been true in years past, that Spanos, Telesco, whatever, impose their picks on, and, you know, and their free agent signings or whatever on the head coach. And again, maybe that's been true. But this would, like, if Tillery is not the starter by week one, or if they bench him pretty early on for Morgan Fox, A, it would make sense anyway, but B, it would be a huge, huge organizational shift. We know last year, and the defensive line is what started all of this for what we know, and we'll never be able to share it. But we know how much of a problem accountability was on defense last year, and how much people were questioned. I mean, media members, people like us, people inside were questioning the decisions that were made on, for the roster, because it was a first round pick starting. It was a bunch of friends starting. People just wanted competition. And now if they let Fox come in, compete and start over a first round pick, that is a massive organizational shift. I don't think we can't understand enough, or overstate enough, how important that would be for this team. Maybe at worst, just for outlook from fans and how they look and perceived outlook from fans on the outside. But if they truly let competition happen this year, where that was a huge problem last year that hurt a lot of people, if they let competition work out this year and Ogbonia beats out this person or whatever, and Morgan Fox beats out Jerry Tillery, that's huge. Now, he might not. Fox completely might just be a depth signing. But I asked the coach about whether Fox is going to be a depth signing, or is he just competing, or if he's just a depth signing, or if he's legitimately competing for a starting job. And the word was, if I know Fox, that's already his job, takers only. He's going to be competing for this job. And that's huge. That's huge for the Chargers to move forward like this, breed competition and acknowledge that just because you're a first round pick doesn't mean you get the right to start immediately. Doesn't mean you get the right to sit out the entire preseason. That would be a huge jump for this organization.
Yeah, I think you look at, you know, just kind of what happened last year, and, you know, it seemed like they were seeing all the right things in terms of competition. And, you know, we, of course, were seeing Brain Fajoco and Forrest Merrill and Cortez Brown kind of, you know, battle it out for that last spot. And then it was like, okay, well, here's Eric Banks instead. And then, you know, we heard the things that we heard throughout the season, and Jerry Tillery ends up playing like 850 total snaps on the year, which is just absurd. And part of that probably was the injuries. Part of that was, you know, losing Justin Jones and Linval Joseph and things like that. But like, they had no choice other than to play Jerry Tillery a ton of snaps because they just didn't have somebody behind him that kind of, you know, could offer the same kind of skill set. Now with Morgan Fox, you could have at minimum a truly complimentary piece behind him, or like Tyler is saying, kind of, you know, challenge him for the starting spot, maybe even split 50-50. But, you know, they needed more pass rush from the interior. And, you know, we kind of, every time we were talking about the defensive line in terms of adding a draft pick, we were focused on, you know, drafting a Matthew Butler type, or an Oyemela Uzurike type, somebody that could bring that and be that rookie developmental player. Then instead they go with Tito Ogbonia, and that's fine. You know, Tyler and I think that he's probably better right now as a pass rusher, but, you know, long term he's probably a, you know, Sebastian Joseph Day kind of player. So, you know, there just kind of was this void in terms of, you know, pass rush from the interior. Now you have Morgan Fox to kind of, you know, support that group and improve a much improved pass rush. Like, you know, I'm working on this video in terms of deep diving into the Chargers pass rush, and last year was not pretty, like, across the board. And now they've added Khalil Mack, they've added Kyle Van Noy, Austin Johnson, Sebastian Joseph. They are not great pass rushers, but they're better than they had last year with Linval Joseph and Christian Covington. And now Morgan Fox is kind of the, you know, the bow or you know, the frosting on the cake in terms of the pass rush. So I'm a big fan of this just in terms of on field play. If he does end up starting in front of Jerry Tillery, then like Tyler's saying, you know, that's a massive shift in philosophy, but it's not a massive shift from Brandon Staley. You know, one of the things that we heard about him was that he was not afraid to play the later draft picks. Of course, you know, kind of the biggest case there is playing Jordan Fuller over Taylor Rapp and Terrell Burgess and, you know, have him be that starting free safety despite being a seventh round pick. So I think this would potentially be him being, you know, getting back to his roots. And if Morgan Fox outplays Jerry Tillery, I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, I mean, if Morgan Fox ends up being the number one starter and Jerry Tillery ends up being two, or one of them's 1A, 1B, I think we're probably headed for kind of a 1A, 1B scenario. Yeah. I also think that that could be good for Jerry Tillery, right? I mean, I think part of the problem, like you and Tyler alluded to, is that he had to play not 850. I know the number is 878 because I looked at those gnarly numbers on PFF today. So, you know, you kind of look at that and you're like, I believe Fox played something like 561 last year. If you can kind of get that to be more in the middle for both of those players and say, you know, let's say Fox plays around 650 snaps, Tillery plays around 700, like that's probably what you sort of optimally want, or one of them being kind of 1A, 1B, like I said. And I think that takes pressure off of Tillery where he doesn't have to come in on the run game as much. He doesn't have to, you know, play every snap, get beat up, and then, you know, be the only really interior pass rusher guy. I think that's kind of what messed him up at times last year, too. But at worst, you're bringing in a guy, you know, pretty much cheap depth signing who has familiarity with the Staley system. And it's not a coincidence that now pretty much at every level of the Chargers defense, including Bryce Callahan, including Troy Reader, you know, including Khalil Mack, you're just bringing in tons of guys who have, you know, familiarity with the Staley scheme, how it's supposed to be run. And, you know, basically at this point, Morgan Fox is another one of those guys. I feel like Morgan Fox has been a Charger for like 2 months secretly because we've just been talking about him as like a hypothetical signing. I know Gavino has been on it from Chargers Wire. We've always talked about like, oh, maybe they get him, right? Akeem Hicks is another one of those guys, but they ended up going with Morgan Fox. So I think this is a great signing for the Chargers. You get more depth. They just needed another interior defensive lineman pass rusher at this point, whether that was going to be like someone they got in the draft, whether it was going to be an Akeem Hicks, whomever. And I think Morgan Fox applies that, had his best season statistically under Brandon Staley, and has pretty much like kept up similar production numbers, you know, in regards to his pass rush, you know, pass rush wins, his pressure creation. It's been, you know, pretty on par with Jerry Tillery or better. And pretty much all of these seasons, last 3 years, I think he's actually created 2.5% more pressure. So, you know, over a series of 1,000 snaps, that's about another 20, 30 pressures added. So that's not bad either. So I think really the Chargers just kind of got better, right? Like they've been doing with these signings in terms of getting Bryce Callahan, in terms of getting all these pieces after the draft, like Kyle Van Noy as well. Just another place where I think they won in the margins. And you know, this kind of goes into a lot of our comp pick discussions that we've been having, right? I think it was pretty unlikely that you were going to get like significant comp pick value out of Jerry Tillery. But if Morgan Fox does kind of like have a quasi breakout season and some team wants to give him a 1 year, 2 year contract next year, like in the same vein of Kyle Van Noy playing with this defense, that's some added value, I think, to him as well in terms of what he could bring to the Chargers down the road, even if he is only here for 1 year. But I think it just made all the sense in the world to go get another pass rushing defensive lineman, and specifically one that has a lot of familiarity with Staley.
Yeah, you know, last year we kind of got sick of like, oh, like here's another former Broncos cornerback to like come in and fill the gaps. And like, you know, Brandon Staley was able to bring in like bottom of the roster kind of players to be familiar with his scheme, but they were bottom of the roster players. So now you have, you know, Morgan Fox, now you have Bryce Callahan, now you have Troy Reader, guys who will actually come in and contribute. Of course, Khalil Mack is there. And I know certain people were kind of complaining about that, like, oh, this is just a bunch of Staley guys. But it's like, well, then you also have J.C. Jackson. You also have Kyle Van Noy. You also have, you know, these rookie players. And so I think there's a good balance of the Staley guys and, like, the not Staley guys, you know, players who are not so used to playing in this kind of scheme, although maybe a little bit similar. So, yeah, I think they've done a good job of balancing, just get the band back together and adding like legitimate talent that are kind of outside sources as well. So that's not really an issue for me.
Yeah, I completely agree there. What do you think about, I have not watched Morgan Fox, but he seems to be perceived better pass rusher in 2021, not good in run defense statistically, yeah. But in 2020, way better. And the coach I talked to said that Carolina was just a glorified college football team and didn't know what to do with him. So going back to 2020 will be great, but let's even just say that Fox is a much better pass rusher than he is a run defender. Let's just say he's at that point in his career. What do you think then about this run defense as it is? Everyone's thinking, oh, we got Fox, gonna be really good in run defense. Oh, we got Otito Agbonia, here goes our run defense. But both of those guys do project to be better pass rushers than run defenders. So what do you think about the way the roster is constructed and the fact that they're just kind of loading up on pass rushers, which isn't bad, but if Fajoko's off the roster because of this move, we're really starting to slim down how many run stopping options that we have overall.
Yeah, I think, you know, when Brandon Slade was hired, I of course watched a lot of the 2020 Rams defense, and Morgan Fox was somebody that stood out. And I think if he hadn't gotten the kind of contract from the Panthers that he did ultimately receive, then, you know, we might have been looking at a player who was on the Chargers last year. So he was somebody that absolutely stood out to me. I think if you go back and rewatch and kind of study the differences there, when he's was with Brandon Staley and the Rams, he was mostly a five tech, meaning rushing in front of the defensive, in front of the offensive tackle, excuse me, or from the three tech, four tech, occasionally even over the center. And that's really where he makes his money, in my opinion. I know he's a little bit on the lighter side in terms of a defensive tackle, but then he signs with the Rams and the majority of his snaps came from the edge, if you're breaking things down. So he gets more snaps on the edge, which is, it's a different game out there. It's a lot more space. You have a bigger responsibility. And it was a college, like the Panthers do a 3-3-5 bullshit college Big 12 defense. It drives me insane that Matt Rhule got to bring this bullshit scheme to the NFL. Like I hate it so much, in case you couldn't tell. And so it just creates, you know, it creates more double teams for a player like Morgan Fox. It creates, you know, tougher situations to produce, as we saw kind of, you know, if you think of like a 3-3-5 defense that you're maybe familiar with, of course, maybe you look at like a Logan Hall or a Peyton Turner from Houston as somebody that was kind of linked to the Chargers the last 2 years. Of course, you have Baylor as well, runs a 3-3-5 and still does after Matt Rhule left. So I think the situation in Carolina, it was poor coaching. It was a poor scheme fit. It was a different role. And yeah, sure, he didn't produce as much as he did in with the Rams, but I mean, he still would have been like fourth on the Chargers in pressures last year. And so I think the Chargers are getting a fine player. I saw some people like be very, very stoked and like, this is awesome. And it is a good signing for sure. But you're getting your fourth, maybe third defensive tackle, depending on how it situates with him and Jerry Tillery.
Yeah, I mean, I think the run defense thing is a little bit overstated too. Like Morgan Fox, no one is going to confuse him for like, this guy's going to, you know, stop the run. But, you know, he's decent enough at it to kind of get by with his pass rushing skills. And they've also upgraded everything around Morgan Fox and Jerry Tillery, right? Like you can sort of live with their liabilities in the run game because now you've replaced Linval Joseph with Sebastian Joseph Day. Right now you've replaced Christian Covington, you still have Christian Covington, but you've replaced him with Austin Johnson. And now you have Khalil Mack instead of Uchenna Nwosu, right? So like in terms of the run game, they've made upgrades everywhere else on the line. So you can kind of afford to have some pass rush or some guys with pass rush upside that aren't as strong against the run. So I think that's really where I stand on it. Again, no one's going to like confuse them for lockdown run defenders, but at the same time, I don't think that matters as much with the upgrades that they've made.
Yeah, and what I know for sure is that Morgan Fox is a better run defender than Jerry Tillery. Like that's without a doubt. So, you know, it is going to be really interesting, but like Alex is saying, I think you have Sebastian Joseph Day and Austin Johnson will be kind of your two starters, if you will. I would expect them to play the bulk of the snaps. And those players too, you know, providing an upgrade in pass rush – as well as run defense. So if everybody in this unit stays healthy, you know, I think we can talk about that sixth spot being up for grabs. Maybe it's Fajoco, maybe it's Covington, maybe it's Forrest Merrill. I know people still really like him, but I think you have five spots secure with Sebastian Joseph Day, Austin Johnson, Tillery Fox, and of course Obonya. And then, you know, we'll kind of see. I hope that sixth spot is Brandon Fajoco. I really do, because he is their statistically most productive run defender outside of Sebastian Joseph Day and Covington. While Brandon said they kind of spoke very highly of him, the film and the numbers don't really back that up. And so I really do hope that sixth spot comes down to Brandon Fajoco.
What are the odds you think they keep seven, out of curiosity?
Ooh, that they keep seven.
I was trying to look. The Niners are very different, obviously. They keep 11, but that's very different. I was
rotate all of their guys so much.
Mm-hmm. They did five last year. Seven would be a huge jump, but they do have two open spots because no more tight end four, probably no more running back four. It's possible.
I'm pretty confident in saying. What's up, Alex?
I was just saying, I think the max you're probably getting is six. I don't think they're going to go as far as seven. I don't really think Merrill makes the roster at this point. Fajoco is probably kind of on that bubble, like we've talked about. And now you're bringing Morgan Fox into the fold. But I think it's much more likely to be around five or six.
I feel pretty confident that it's going to be six this year. I think they learned down the stretch how important it was to have that sixth body. And even if you make somebody inactive on game day, like you have the option, you're playing the Cleveland Browns, you're playing the Ravens. Hey, we need more beef in the interior of this game, maybe against the Raiders or somebody who's not going to run the ball as much. Okay, we can get away with five. We'll do five edge rushers this game or you know, six receivers or whatever. But I think they learned their lesson when it comes to only keeping five. And I think we will see them ultimately keep six. But I think Fajoco certainly has a chance, man. I think Covington has a chance as well. So I think that spot is really going to be a heated competition in training camp. And if they really are about production and legitimate competition, then I expect Fajoco to win that competition.
I hope they've learned their lesson. I don't know that they have yet. We'll find out when they make the roster. But instead of keeping six defensive linemen and one inactive on game day, they kept four running backs and one inactive on game day. So we'll figure out when that time comes what their decisions on the roster are going to be. I hope you're right, Steven, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. I hope I'm right too, because keeping five would be really stupid at this point. All right, we'll talk briefly about the Chargers' decision to claim Zach Bailey, former offensive lineman who's played on the practice squad most of his career. I don't think he's actually ever appeared in an NFL game. He's been on the practice squad of the Vikings, the Commanders, and others. But this is something that's obviously been in the works. The Chargers have put in waiver claims on two, potentially three, before ultimately claiming Zach Bailey. So they clearly felt the need to add another body to the offensive line group. Again, there's like no film of this guy since he came into the league. There's no statistics. But Alex, any thoughts here on the decision to sign Zach Bailey?
Probably just a training camp body at this point, but I mean, they might let him and some of the other, you know, guys that are going to be competing for some of those final guard spots, like just kind of go at it and see, you know, which ones can make the practice squad. That's sort of what it seems like. They've been beefing up that interior offensive line both before and after the draft. You know, they got the clap and they decided to, you know, do that before the draft, get the center to, you know, replace Scott Quesenberry. So, you know, ever since then, obviously, then they go get Zion Johnson and Jamari Salier in the draft. So at this point, I think that, you know, getting Zach Bailey is really just like a depth move. Steven, if you don't have any offensive line breakdowns on this guy, I'm not going to have a whole lot to say on him. But I think their repeated like waiver claims and stuff like that makes it clear that they view the interior offensive line as an area of focus. And, you know, I mean, at this point, you just sort of want more guys to give you that competition in the preseason. And I think that's probably what this is about.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this. The college numbers look good. I think his pass blocking efficiency was like 98 something.
They do, yeah.
So there's that. Obviously not exactly sticking with any team right now, so I don't know how good or how bad he's been. Happy to have him.
Yeah, there was they did put a claim in on Drew Himmelman, I think is how you say that, sure. Former Bronco, who actually took the place initially of Zach Bailey in Washington, and then Himmelman ended up failing a physical, so now he's back on the free agent market. So I don't think there's necessarily any like big takeaway. Like I saw some people were asking me on Twitter, like, oh, does this mean they're kicking Matt Filer to right tackle? And it's like, no, I don't think this has any kind of really large ramification on the roster. I think we'll kind of just see how they sort out the best five offensive linemen in training camp. But I think they wanted some more competition for the back end of the roster. I think you have a guy like Ryan Hunter, you have some of the undrafted free agents. So they just wanted to be able to kind of fill out the preseason offensive line units. Maybe there's a chance that him or Hunter kind of beat out Will Clapp, but I kind of doubt it. So ultimately, I think the nine offensive line spots that they'll carry on the active roster are kind of spoken for at this point. But you know, this could be a practice squad stash. This could be, you know, just kind of that ultimate dart throw.
My current NFL conspiracy is that the Chargers haven't made a move at right tackle yet because they're reworking Matt Filer's contract. That's my conspiracy right now.
Steven, I'm curious what you think of this, just because there's been very little buzz on Brendan Hymas at this point. Sure. Not that I think he's really in danger of losing a roster spot, but you know, they did take Salier, obviously got Will Clapp. What do you kind of make of, I guess, the lack of noise on him at this point?
Yeah, so Brandon Thorne was on Duke Mannyweather's, or I guess Duke Mannyweather was on Brandon Thorne's podcast. And this was in like February. And Brandon Thorne said that he heard good things about Brendan Hymas' development throughout the season and that the Chargers were reportedly excited about him. And then, of course, they drafted Jamari Salier. So I think the decision to draft Salier was, frankly, they just wanted to get more quality offensive linemen and didn't really feel like they could take a project at that point, and you just take the value of Salier. So I don't think he's in danger of getting cut. I don't think he necessarily has a clear shot at starting either, unless they are kicking Matt Filer to right tackle. But you know, we'll see. They gave him a true redshirt season last year, barely played except in blowouts, and really was inactive for most of the season. So I mean, we'll get into the Salier projections in a minute here, but it is interesting that they kind of drafted another guard, drafted Zion, of course. So it is kind of, his future is kind of cloudy in terms of getting a starting spot. But if he becomes a valuable backup as a fifth round pick, then you're still talking about a valuable player. It's just, you know, his preseason film was so good. I was so high on him as a draft prospect. So I wish he could get a chance, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think with Clapp, they were just, okay, let's just find a guy ahead of the draft. And then Salier was just, oh my God, this guy's falling to us. We might as well take him in the sixth round. I think Hymas just hasn't moved. I think he's exactly where he has been. I don't think he's fallen out of favor. I don't think he's gained favor. I just think he's where he is. Scott Questenberry, I don't know if they didn't draft any other guards most of the time that he was there. But he just always that bridesmaid, never a bride sort of guy. I think Hymas just might be that. We're always going to have a very, very good depth option. Sure. Spot starter maybe, and that's about it.
Yeah, which, you know, kind of sucks, but it is what it is. All right, so before we get to our rookies, we did have a super chat question from Clinton Ehrlich. I'm going to guess that's how you say that. Let me know. It says, hypothetically, Justin Herbert refuses to play quarterback. Do you convert him to tight end or linebacker?
Ooh.
For what it's
worth, tackle?
Can he play right tackle? he's got the size and the length, man. Just gotta add the, you know, 60 pounds.
And Jerry Tillery can duke it out. Right
tackle. Yeah, he can play right tackle, then you trade for Tyrod Taylor, and you know, sure. We were just running back. Yeah,
there you go. For what it's worth, his brother played or plays. I don't know if he's still at Oregon, but he was a tight end.
He is.
So mm-hmm. Maybe that runs in the blood a little bit, I guess. I don't know if he would have the kind of aggressive nature to play linebacker, but I would put him at tight end if he refused to play quarterback. Maybe be Terrell Pryor.
There you go. Use him like Terrell Pryor. What else? Safety. I don't know. Big giant safety.
my goodness. All right. So Thomas pointing out that Zach Bailey is listed as a guard slash tackle on his Twitter bio before the Chargers picked him up. And I guess he played right tackle in college. So.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, we'll see, I guess. They had Hymus do both last year. Yeah. So we'll see.
Somebody asked OBJ to the Chargers. No, would be very surprised.
Yeah. I joked about it because I couldn't think of another person other than Fox, but, no, it's probably not happening, but I don't know. I guess never say never now with this regime.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker said that Patrick Herbert is still at Oregon. So there you go.
Did you guys watch the, interview with Trenkel?
I have not yet.
Was it good?
It's fine.
It's fine.
He's just not, you know, Philip Rivers, or he's a nice guy. And I guess the biggest thing I took away from it was that, you know, he's at Oregon and Tranquil's asking him, you know, did you expect to start? Did you this or that? He's like, you know, no, I just, you know, thought everybody else is better than me. I thought this guy was better. I didn't think I was going to start. And they finally started getting him one reps and he's like, oh, well, cool. I get the third of the fast guys today. So Staley, I guess, approached Herbert and said, listen, you got to stop being this aw shucks guy. You got to just go take it, like go win, go fight for it, all that sort of stuff. So I thought that was the most interesting thing. Otherwise, it was, I mean, Herbert is a nice guy, but he's not like a crazy good interview.
Yeah, I saw somebody pointing out that, I guess, in the same interview, he said that the Chargers have kind of asked him for input. Is that true?
I missed that. I only watched the first half.
Okay. But I mean, obviously, Justin is such a good player, and, you know, I was posting about his lack of turnover plays today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, media wise, it's so funny because he always uses the phrase like such a great opportunity. And he even said that at the groundbreaking of the practice facility in his interview right after. They were like, Justin, what do you think about this? He's like, oh, this is a great opportunity for us.
He's definitely got his like phrasing down. Yeah. His like rotating set of 10 phrases.
Looks like we got another super chat from Clinton. Which player on the roster do you think would be most effective if converted to the other side of the ball? Oh, it's Derwin James.
Derwin James. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Put him at receiver, be fantastic.
Yeah, Derwin was playing offense. I watched that interview a while ago, and he was playing a ton of offense. And I think it was the high school he went to. They only had a safety spot on varsity available. So he's like, okay, I'll just play safety. So he would, could have legitimately been an offensive player, but he ended up being a safety.
I feel like Nasir Adderley would be a pretty sick wide receiver if he had hands. Like that would be cool. But there's a reason he plays defense. Yeah, but
Keenan Allen said he was on the Mark Ingram and Cam Jordan podcast last summer and said that some schools offered him as a safety as opposed to a receiver. So that could be another one, but Keenan's a little too slow. Like I think, you know, that's fine a receiver where you're playing in the slot a lot, but I think he's a little too slow to play on an island as a safety. Donald Parham as an edge rusher would be sick as hell.
I would love to see Rashawn Slater play defense just because I think he's super freaking talented.
Yeah.
He's a fish
defensive
killer.
Tackle or slim down for an edge rusher?
I don't want to see chubby Rashawn Slater. Let's go edge rusher.
I know they posted it a few days ago, but that video of him doing that pass set in the water and just like sending that fish flying.
I'm glad the Chargers acknowledged it because I was like, wait, did he step on a fish? Yeah, poor, and then he looks at it like, oh crap, I just killed a fish. That's nasty. That's an explosive pass set.
It was in the water too. So
yeah.
And Clinton, apologies for mispronouncing your name. I took a shot and I was wrong, but thanks for that. And appreciate the super chats.
Rashawn Slater's got quick left tackle feet, but not quick enough to save that fish.
No prisoners. No mercy.
No mercy. All right. We are going to kind of shift gears here, and we're going to talk about some of our projections for this rookie class and specifically kind of determining what roles they might play. And if applicable, we'll talk about some stat projections. You know, those day three guys are a little bit tough, but we'll do our best. So, of course, we have to start with Zion Johnson, the Chargers first round pick, obviously going to be the Chargers starting right guard. And I think this is an interesting case study, and Arjun kind of pointed this out too. You know, the guard prospects who come right in and you play guard versus the ones who are tackle prospects who convert to guard on the inside. Of course, I knew you had a presentation. I thought about doing one because I did like a Google Doc, but I knew you're going to do it. So
yeah, now I just feel like an asshole. Like, here's this fucking presentation again. Here we go.
No, it's great. It's great for our visual audience, man. It really is. I appreciate it. And like I said, I thought about doing one, but I just have my Google Doc with all my notes and things like that. So why don't you run down what you have on this presentation first?
Oh, it's just a little visual thing for anybody who's watching or just for us to look at. It's his pass blocking efficiency, or obviously the changes for defensive players. You know, pressures allowed, sacks allowed, penalties, RAS score. And then the composite at the bottom is the composite rankings where we had him on a stats, you know, per play stats basis, just for anybody who's curious. So here's what it looked like. So if I say, oh, well, you know, he had this or that, or he wasn't that great at this or that in college, we at least have some numbers here for some context.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, where to go? Ben S, shout out to Ben S, says PowerPoints in the chat. you know, so Daniel Popper has the spreadsheets. We have the PowerPoints, I guess.
Okay, hey, you know, sweet.
There you go. So yeah, I went through and kind of not studied film. I mean, I'm familiar with some of these guys, but I went and looked at kind of the recent rookie guard comparisons that could potentially fit what we could see from Zion Johnson. And I think the first one that just was kind of a natural thing for me, because, you know, I was such a big fan of him and I graded them very closely, is Elijah Vera Tucker. Yeah. And so, you know, you look at what Elijah Vera Tucker did last season, like Arjun was pointing out, he was a tackle prospect converting to guard. And I think that showed in glimpses of his rookie season. Mm-hmm. He ended up starting 16 games for the Jets last season and really struggled out of the gate. So he ended up allowing 15 pressures in his first four games, which is not great. But I think you saw him really make some strides down the stretch of the season, despite, you know, allowing 42 total pressures. He did have a pass blocking efficiency rating of 96.6, which is very, very good for a rookie guard. And, you know, I think, like I mentioned, down the stretch, he ended up only allowing six pressures in his last six games. You know, second in the class in run blocking grade, he only had five penalties. So I think he had a slow start, but I think he finished strong. And I think that is a possibility for Zion. The other one I wanted to mention is Caesar Ruiz, who I kind of compared Zion to, at least athletically, leading up to the draft. Caesar was pretty solid for the Saints across the board. He did have a game against the Bears and specifically Akeem Hicks, where he allowed eight total pressures in one game, which is obviously not great, but he ended up only allowing 25 total pressures, very similar pass blocking efficiency rating as Elijah Vera Tucker, but he was a significantly worse run blocker. According to PFF, his run blocking grade was 61.6. So I think he struggled a little bit more. He was a center in college, so I think maybe kind of just being that shift was a little more difficult than people kind of thought, but he was a solid player. So I think those are two players that were like natural comparisons for me, especially, you know, athletic profiles being very comparable for both of those guys. But I'm curious to kind of hear what you guys think in terms of maybe some comparable situations or players that could be, you know, potential fits or comps for him, I guess.
Yeah, I first looked at last year and I was thinking, okay, you know, what did everybody else do at guard? And most of the guys that struggled were those guard tackle converts, you know, Leatherwood, Mayfield, Elijah Vera Tucker. I was surprised to see that Trey Smith allowed 49 pressures. For some reason, I just assumed he was a lot better than that. I mean, the pass block efficiency wasn't that bad, but still 49 was a surprise. I think it's tough because I'm trying to weigh Zion Johnson, our favorite interior offensive lineman, highest graded interior offensive lineman, me the last 2 years, my only 2 years, you for 3 years. So I take that into account and I consider someone like Trey Smith, who I liked less. And so I think he'll do better than that at least. And
sure,
the only problem, and it can't be like a perfect situation, is Zion is going to be playing right guard. That does give me a little bit of pause there. And then he is likely at this point playing next to Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton. And I just don't think that's the best situation. If he were on the left side between Slater and Lindsley, that's golden. That's a beautiful situation. His natural spot. Having to go to right guard, not having a great right tackle situation next to him, that's a bit more concerning. So we'll talk about stats in a bit, but I think I'll have a good season. I think I'll have a better season than someone like a Trey Smith in terms of pressures allowed. I think he'll just be good throughout the year at worst. There'll be some iffy games because the switch is difficult. Sure. Even though he's a guy who's built and can switch, but he has to switch. So I think it'll be a solid season, better than someone like a Trey Smith, but I don't think it'll be the peak season he could have because he is switching.
Yeah, I think the switching component kind of makes it hard for him to have the peak season, in addition to the fact that we don't know who he's playing next to at right tackle, right? In theory, that could be Matt Filer. But then if it's Matt Filer playing there, you're probably moving him to left guard, like we've said. So, or you're having to help a lot with either Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton. I mean, I think with Zion, you're going to get very solid play. There will be some iffy moments. I think for people that are probably expecting like a Rashawn Slater season because we were spoiled last year, you're probably not going to get that. You're not going to get like an all pro, you know, Pro Bowl like type year, I don't think, from Zion Johnson, like out the gate. Just because I think it's harder for guards to come into the league than it is for like first round tackles anyway. But you know, I think he'll be very solid, certainly like an upgrade over, you know, what they've had before, in terms of like trying to just fit a right guard in there. Obviously, you know, Obuchi was good prior to going down last year, but I think if you get even Obuchi or slightly above Obuchi, you know, performance last year, that's what you could probably expect from Zion Johnson.
Sure.
It'll take him a while to sort of fit in. You just hope for some of the consistency along that line and for the Chargers to kind of stick with whatever decision they make at right tackle and not have to, you know, have a bunch of moving pieces move around. So, but ultimately Zion is clearly the most pro ready player in the Chargers class. You know, I think he has kind of the least concerns coming out about what his role is or what his stats are going to be. Granted, he's an offensive lineman, so I don't know if there's a ton of like stats to talk about, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't believe. Okay. So we all know this about Rashawn Slater. We know he's great. 26 pressures allowed all year last year. For some reason, I thought it was more. 26, man. Like Leatherwood, 65, Mayfield, 57, Smith, 49, Barrett Tucker, 42. 26 as a left tackle. Jeez, man. What a season.
And he said in his press conference that some of his rookie film made him cringe. This guy is going to be
He was watching Joshua Kelly block.
Yeah, probably. That one time Joshua Kelly tried to chip Myles Garrett and ended up pushing Myles Garrett into Justin Herbert, essentially. You know, good stuff. But I think, obviously, Quentin Nelson is kind of like the gold standard of like immediate guards. I don't think that kind of play for Zion Johnson is realistic by any means. I think you can make an argument that Nelson is obviously the best interior offensive lineman in the league and was that right away. And I don't think that's going to be the case for Zion. But I think in terms of best case scenario, we could look at Elgton Jenkins from the Packers. I think that, like I said, best case scenario. And, you know, he was a very similar prospect. He was a center in college. He played both at the Senior Bowl, really kind of renowned for his smarts and his intelligence and also his physicality and things like that. So he was not necessarily an immediate star like Quentin Nelson was, but Elgton Jenkins was a Pro Bowl player as a rookie. He did not allow a single sack, and he only allowed 20 total pressures and had a pass blocking efficiency rating of 98.0. So he was a fantastic rookie. Obviously, there's certain parallels there because he played next to Corey Lindsley. Zion Johnson is going to be playing next to Corey Lindsley. Athletic profiles kind of match up. But I think you can kind of look at that as being the best case scenario. PFF only gave him a 65.7 run blocking grade. And I remember watching Corey Lindsley and watching Elgton Jenkins rookie season after the Chargers signed Corey Lindsley. And that did not reflect his play at all, in my opinion, in terms of his run blocking grade. So I think, again, you're looking at that being the peak. And I think he ultimately ends up somewhere in between what we're talking about with Elgton Jenkins, who was an immediate Pro Bowl player, and Cesar Ruiz, who for the most part was really, really solid across the board. And I think you'll have, again, some really high moments you know, we'll see that physical dominance. We'll also see some struggles. Like, he's probably going to get beat a few times by Aaron Donald in week 17. You know, Chris Jones will probably give him some trouble, of course, as they do that to everybody. But I feel confident in projecting a, you know, very, very good season for Zion Johnson. And if everything goes well, maybe he does kind of challenge for the Pro Bowl. Maybe he gets like a Pro Bowl alternate spot or something like that. But obviously, we feel very, very good about Zion's projection. Interesting question here from Chorizo, and then we'll kind of move on here. How much different is your projection for Zion's rookie season if he starts out as left guard versus right guard?
Statistically, I don't think I could really tell you. Let's say I would go from a 97 PB to 98 or something. I would just feel more comfortable about his floor and his ceiling. But I don't think he would have as many lapse games, especially playing between those two guys. Couldn't really put a number to it. But I think as a left guard, you could legitimately have like a second team All-Pro again. Honestly, that's how I feel about him. Right guard, maybe not as much.
Yeah, I agreed. I think left guard is the better spot for him if we're just trying to like move the offensive line around. But at this point, if they're not going to move either there, then they have to play him a right guard and take the punches that come with that.
So apparently Austin Gale and Mike Renner were doing a all under 25 team and almost put Zion in there.
That's interesting. Oh, he was an honorable mention or something. It must've been, I mean, how many guards? I assume they broke it up guard and center, not just interior. How many, I mean, like, again, we talked about last year's guard class. Most of them were not that. Like 40 something, like PFF should love Zion Johnson statistically. Like, they are a stats based group, and given sure. All that, like, what was Zion's percentile? Or what was it? Did PFF have the rate of blown blocks, or was that something else?
That's True Media.
And it was like, what, 0.3%?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, stats based guys, they would love Zion Johnson, I think. So, that makes sense.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, so expecting big things from Zion Johnson, of course. We'll kind of see what position he plays, but I feel confident in his rookie season. Let's get to JT Woods next. Of course, Chargers do not have a second-round pick, JT Woods being the third-round pick. Tyler has his by-the-numbers here. He had 51 tackles, 16 run stops, the missed tackle percentage of 17.9, one touchdown allowed, 9 interceptions and pass breakups, has a 9.43 RAS score, and was safety 12 out of 26 on the composite rankings list that we compiled. So, Alex, we'll start with you here. What are your expectations for the role that JT Woods will play, and maybe potentially some statistic breakdowns?
I mean, I think if you're looking for a statistical comparison, it's kind of hard to find one, but I sort of went back to like what Nasir Adderley's real rookie year was in 2020. He ended up having that interception. I think total he had like 3-4 pass breakups, somewhere around 50-60 tackles. I think that's probably what you're looking for, although potentially not as much because in that season, Derwin was obviously hurt. And then you sort of had to have, you know, that was Rashawn Jenkins and Nasir Adderley, you know, being sort of the 1-2 safety that time. Really depends on what they kind of see in Mark Webb and Alohi Gilman at this point. I think they're probably higher on Mark Webb. So if they do want to play him more, then you could kind of see him getting in the rotation a little bit. JT Woods is clearly safety 3 at this point, but depends on how much they want to play the other guys, because that obviously affects, you know, how many chances he has to get interceptions and pass breakups and things of that nature, as well as racking up tackles. If we're projecting stats, the one thing that's concerning is from the gate, he's probably going to struggle with missed tackle rate. Sure. I don't think there's much of a doubt about that. But you know, we'll kind of see, you know, how that progresses in the season. I could see him starting at maybe like a 20% missed tackle rate in those first few weeks and then see that slowly start to come down throughout the season. I think that's optimally what you would kind of want to see in terms of development. But yeah, I think JT Woods is pretty clearly, you know, safety three at this point. They're going to have Derwin, him, and Nas, you know, rotating pretty consistently. I'm curious to see what they kind of want in his role. I think you'll have him playing a lot of deep. I don't think he'll be playing up close because I think they'll let Derwin and Nas handle that stuff, obviously sort of because of JT's missed tackle rate and just because those guys are more comfortable with that right now in general, having been in the league. I think it'll be a bit of a slower process than people are thinking in terms of bringing him along, but he's obviously going to see the field a lot. I think he probably gets, I mean, you could probably round it up to like 45, 50 tackles, let's say one interception and four pass breakups. Like, I think that's kind of what you're looking for in a JT Woods rookie campaign.
Yeah, I think in terms of his role, like Alex is saying, I do expect him to be that third safety. I think that athletic profile is just going to be, you know, so useful for them. And if you're talking about like playing time, you know, Alohi Gilman and Trey Marshall combined for 562 snaps last year as kind of those third and fourth safeties, mostly third safeties. And I think not all of those will go to Woods, right? Like, I do expect, you know, Mark Webb to be involved as well, but we'll probably see Woods start a couple games. You know, Adderley's kind of had some hamstring issues here and there. Of course, Derwin hasn't been fully healthy since his rookie season. Again, not obviously wishing that to happen, but you know, just kind of the reality of the NFL is that Woods will start probably two or three games, and I think he ends up playing like somewhere around 15, maybe 20 snaps tops per game. And so if you can get, you know, 40 tackles out of him, like 7 to 10 run stops, maybe an interception, maybe a fumble recovery, get his hands on a couple balls, a couple turnovers, and then keep that missed tackle rate relatively low, then I think we can talk about a good rookie season. I think if his missed tackle rate is anything worse than 17.9, then we're going to be, you know, having some questions there. So as long as that improves for me, as long as he gets his hands on a couple turnovers, I think I'll be pretty happy if he's able to stay involved, play maybe, you know, 400 snaps, 350, and, you know, be okay, be a serviceable starter. Then I think we could be happy and see some flashes for, you know, a potential breakout season as a sophomore once Nasir Adderley potentially moves on.
Yeah, but you guys covered most of it at this point. I think with the same roster as last year, if you're just looking at like coverage snaps, maybe he gets like 350 coverage snaps, but I know they're not safeties, but they kept Davis. They added Callahan. They drafted Seer Taylor. Webb's going to be healthy and competing. Dean Laird's an outside corner. I don't think he really applies here. I guess Davis isn't really either. But I guess you have a lot of DBs. And so I think that'll just kind of eats away at how much he'll be on the field. I'm curious to see what happens in training camp with his role when it comes to any kind of man coverage, if at all. Does he work against tight ends at all? Does he play in the slot at all? Does he blitz? So those two things, if he's a pass rusher in some capacity, is he manning up against tight ends at all in any capacity? I don't think he does do that. And so I think Mark Webb can kind of eat some snaps there. So but I'm same page as you guys. I think like 200, 250 snaps, one interception, 10 run stops, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think if, you know, Brandon, we've talked about this before, but Brandon Staley obviously wants to help his young players be comfortable in their roles right away. And I think it's possible, right, that maybe JT Woods, his immediate role is exclusively playing the deep parts of the field in certain dime package situations. Maybe Mark Webb is exclusively kind of your money backer or slot guy, and the two of them kind of split that third safety role. I think that's totally possible, but I think Woods, really the focus here for me is, you know, get some turnovers, improve that missed tackle rate, and really kind of show that improved technique. Because, you know, I went back and watched some of the Rams defense, and Jordan Fuller, of course, is somebody that really stands out to you from a processing standpoint. I think you can see some safe comparisons in terms of technique, in terms of ability mentally between Fuller and JT Woods' film as a prospect at Baylor. And so, I mean, obviously Woods is a much better athlete than Jordan Fuller was. Fuller, a seventh round pick out of Ohio State. But mentally, there's a lot of comparisons there for me. So I think the future is certainly bright for JT Woods. I'm not necessarily projecting like an immediate starter role unless somebody is injured, but I think he will contribute right away. He will be an instant impact player. Just depends, you know, how much we're talking about here.
Right. Yep. Totally agree.
So we'll move on next to Isaiah Spiller, who I think is probably going to be, you know, their biggest impact rookie in terms of statistics. Tyler, why don't you run down his 2021 numbers here?
Sure. So over 1,000 rushing yards, just a bit, 5.7 yards per attempt, 189 receiving yards, 3.63 yards after or yards. What the hell is that again? Per attempt.
Yards per contact or yards after contact per attempt.
I hate the way that's written. Six touchdowns, one fumble, an RAS score of 5.73. I don't know if you knew that he had a low RAS score. People, I'm just kidding. I'm sure Alex has told us. And then a composite rankings, 11 out of 20. So just like solid, you know, average.
All right. Well, Tyler, why don't you kick us off here? Because you're kind of the highest on Spiller of the three of us. So what are you, what are your expectations for Spiller's rookie season?
So I think looking at how they use Justin Jackson, and we do see some Justin Jackson in him, I think he'll eat the combined reps of Justin Jackson for sure, and then just one of those RB 3-4s from last year, whether that's Roundtree, whether that's Kelly, which should give him about 150 touches on the year. Even though he is a running back who's going to play a solid chunk of snaps, I just don't know how featured they're going to make him. If Eckler goes down, then this is a lot of touches and a big part of the offense. But and that might happen. Eckler might miss a game or two. And that's kind of what you drafted Spiller for. So I have him at about 150 touches, about 6 yards per touch overall. So that does include receiving. Because he can do both, it does raise his floor for me and his ceiling. So I have him about 900 yards and 4 touchdowns. Touchdowns seem low. I know people want more. But you just like, I think Xander Horvath is going to steal a couple. I think another running back, Austin Eckler, Gerald Everett, Herbert can run. Like there's so many people who can steal touchdowns on this team. I think I'll have a nice solid 900-ish yards, way more if Eckler goes down early, and then 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, if Eckler goes down and misses time, then obviously we're talking about a much bigger season for Isaiah Spiller. And so I did an article for LAFB a few weeks ago, just kind of outlining, you know, what kind of recent history would tell us about Isaiah Spiller's, you know, season, because running back really is, you know, one of the positions, one of the rare positions where as a rookie, you generally see guys hit the ground running, you see them contribute. And so I wanted to figure out potentially what kind of role we were looking at. What are some recent comparisons? And I think the comparison that I settled on was Kerryon Johnson and the Lions. Obviously his career has not turned out great, and so hopefully Spiller has a better career than Kerryon Johnson does. But I think as a rookie, I like the comparison because, you know, the Lions had LeGarrette Blount and Theo Riddick, you know, two veterans who kind of took the load or took the majority of the workload, if you will, from a rushing perspective, that's Blount obviously, and a passing perspective in Theo Riddick. And so I think that if you combine Blount and Riddick, you're essentially getting the kind of workload for Austin Eckler is what I'm trying to say here. LeGarrette Blount ended up with 154 carries that season. Johnson had 118. Riddick caught 61 passes and Johnson caught 32. So I think, you know, if you talk about the kind of split that the Chargers could potentially have with Eckler and Isaiah Spiller, you could be looking at something similar in that regard. Obviously, Austin Eckler, a much better running back than LeGarrette Blount and Theo Riddick. But, you know, I agree with the amount of touches. I think if you project him into that same kind of split, you're talking around 150 carries, maybe 20 catches. And so you could potentially see Isaiah Spiller getting around 815, just kind of if you take the league average there, you know, 150 carries at league average, 4 yards per carry, and then 20 catches at 7 yards per carry, which is the average for running backs and receiving options. So I think you could have, you know, kind of a really safe floor here for Isaiah Spiller, potentially around 800 yards, 4 touchdowns. And then, you know, if he's able to be above average, you know, we're talking about 4.5 yards per carry, maybe 7.5 yards per reception, then you're really talking about a super successful rookie season. If things go well, and you know, I expect him to make an impact right away because of the improved offensive line, because the Chargers frankly need a player like this. And so even if you're a little pessimistic about the prospect, I think you can definitely see a route to instant success for Isaiah Spiller.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really high floor in terms of his production just because he's going to be RB2. Eckler, you know, towards the end of last season was pretty banged up because no one behind him did anything, frankly, and like he needed help. So, yeah. You know, you can kind of project a pretty safe floor for Isaiah Spiller. There's a reason people want him in like dynasty and fantasy drafts and stuff like that. So, you know, I do think you're kind of looking at probably, let's say, 4.5-5 yards a carry, you know, just kind of functioning off of the offense. Obviously, playing behind Eckler, I think, gives him a heads up. And so we'll see kind of how things play out. I think with receiving yards, it's so hard to predict just because Justin Jackson and like all those guys combined in terms of Kelly and Roundtree last year, I believe had something along the lines of 500, 550 rushing yards. And then Jackson was pretty much the only receiving running back in that group, ended up having 178. So yeah, I think you could kind of combine their rushing production if you wanted and say, all right, well, he'll probably have about 550, like 600 if we assume in terms of rushing yards, if we're assuming that he's going to be RB2 for the whole year. And then, you know, depending on how things go, obviously if he plays really well or has to play RB1 for some games, then, you know, those numbers go up. If he starts to struggle or, you know, stuff like that, then those numbers can like slightly kind of go down. And then I think you probably have like a solid, like a little bit like Justin Jackson, probably somewhere between like 140, 180 receiving yards as well. So I guess if I had to like pick a number, I'll probably go like 750 combined yards and let's say 5 touchdowns, right? Like that's sort of where I'm at with it. And I think depending on his role, I think those numbers can move up or down. But I think out of all the rookies, he's pretty clearly like the one that's going to get the most stats and probably the most recognition around the league.
I'm really curious what his leash is in terms of being able to make a mistake, you know, in training camp, on the field. You know, they drafted Kelly. And do you remember if Kelly was benched after a couple of fumbles in 2020?
He was, yeah.
So yeah, I'm really curious because Spiller like is the perceived RB2 and is the better running back, I think. But you do have Kelly, you do have Roundtree. Now, granted, they might not even be on the roster by the time they're considering benching Spiller, but I'm really curious how many mistakes they might let him make.
Yeah, I think he'll have a pretty long leash. You know, LA Chargers fan asking if Horvath makes Kelly and Roundtree disposable. Shout out to Ben, man. Ben, that was a really funny response there. Ben said Kelly and Roundtree make Kelly and Roundtree disposable, which, you know, is accurate. So we'll talk about Xander Horvath in a minute here, but you know, I think one of those two, Kelly and Roundtree, meaning will probably make the roster, and just because they don't really have that. Like if Justin Jackson were still here, then obviously that's your RB3, but they don't really have that guy right now. So yeah, we'll have to see there. All right, let's get to Big Tito. We'll get to Tito next. Obviously, the Chargers' fifth round pick, Tito Ogbonnia. I just did my get to know interview with Will Decker from LAFB chatting about Tito. So that'll be dropping tomorrow. So stay tuned for that one. Tito Bonia last year for UCLA had 17 run stops, 14 pressures, 2 sacks, a PRP of 2.9, pass rush win rate of 8.4. RES was 4.78, and he was 17th out of 17 on our composite rankings. And I think a lot of that, as you'll hear from Will Decker, is due to extremely poor coaching at UCLA. I think you see some flashes on film, but the thing with Tito and his projecting his rookie season for me is just how difficult it is for rookie defensive tackles to make a true impact. And I think, you know, we can definitely be excited about him, and I am excited about him as well. I think there is a very high ceiling here for in terms of physical, you know, attributes. But I went and looked at the last five draft classes, how many defensive tackle prospects as rookies hit 15 total pressures. That was kind of the sweet spot in terms of, are you good as a rookie? Are you bad as a rookie? So 15 was kind of the number there for reference sake. Jerry Tillery had 10 as a rookie. Justin Jones had 12 the year before that. So just kind of a bar there that you might want. So of every single defensive tackle drafted since 2017, only 17 defensive tackles hit 15 total pressures as a rookie, which is not a lot. That's not a good number. And if you talk about run stops, 18 was kind of the sweet spot that I found there. And only 18 defensive tackles hit 18 run stops as a rookie. And the majority of those were obviously first-round players that were starters that were getting a lot of reps. You had Christian Barmore had 51 total pressures last year as a rookie, which is absolutely insane. But for the most part, if you're talking about a rookie defensive tackle, you're talking about a fifth-round draft prospect like Tito, you're talking about somebody who's kind of that fifth, sixth guy in your room, if you will, potentially four, depending on how your roster shakes out. So I think we'll see some flashes from Tito, but I'm definitely not expecting like him to have a huge role, make a huge impact. I think you could even point to like Osa Odigazuwa for the Cowboys last year, had like 28 pressures, six sacks. I think even that is a little bit out of the realm of possibility for Tito. But I am excited about the prospect. This is definitely not me kind of, you know, trying to dump on Tito at all. But I think we just need, more than anybody in this class, I think Tito needs to have some tempered expectations, both because it's such a hard position to transition to in the NFL, and we don't necessarily project him to have a huge role because of the players that are in front of him.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Maybe a decent role, but not with Morgan Fox. I know they're not the same position by any means, but that does take quite a bit away. Steven, can you remind me again, I don't know if you know it off the top of your head, how many defensive tackle rookies last year had more than or had double digit pressures and how many the year before?
So if you take it down to 10, it was four rookie defensive tackles. And if you do like 15 run stops, it was six. Jeez. So it was, last year's class was rough. You know, the best class that I saw was the Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence class. I think that was 2019, if I'm not mistaken. So that class had a lot of instant impact defensive tackles. But last year, it was pretty much like Christian Barmore, Osa Odigazuwa, and then like not much else.
Which makes sense. That was basically the draft. Like that's how we all mostly thought about the draft as is.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to project much for him. And that's fine. I think they know they're stacking this line. I think they know that they're moving on from Jerry Tillery. So next year, it's a fifth round pick who, he will need some time to fix some things. But yeah, like a four or five pressures, two, three, four, rough five run stops, maybe 100 snaps. Yeah, it's just not going to be a big year for him. And that's fine.
Alex, you good?
Yeah, I'm good. Sorry, just trying to hit the unmute button. No, I think Otito is going to... I think if he had been drafted in 2021, he probably gets on the field maybe a little bit sooner just because of all the issues the Chargers had. Sure. Obviously defending the run last year and then all the bodies that dropped because of COVID, because of injuries, right? And you also had players like Linval Joseph and Justin Jones who, were free agents after the year. So that would kind of be like a transition. Plus the Chargers were 28th in run defense anyway, and the defensive line had their problems. So it's like, all right, why not throw him into the fire and just see what he does, right? But now the Chargers are very much a contend now team, and they have to have their defensive line together. They've obviously, gotten all of these guys that we've mentioned over the course of this podcast, right? Adding Morgan Fox to that this week and, getting pretty much every, defensive lineman under the sun to try to like boost this line. So for me, Steven kind of called it in the chat like a redshirt year. I don't know if I would go quite that far in terms of like because he will play in spurts, right? But I just think with the amount of talent they've added, I don't see him, putting up, some big sack numbers, certainly not six sacks and 28 pressures. I think if you wanted to like make like a real number, it would probably be something like 10 pressures, two sacks. Like, maybe that's kind of like underselling it, but at the same time, I just don't think he's going to be on the field very much to get those opportunities. he's not in their top two pass rushing interior defensive linemen with Jerry Tillery and Morgan Fox. He's not going to be rack up a ton of tackles as like a nose tackle or a run defense ideal either. So it's just hard to really like find a spot for him where he's going to rack up these numbers. And I think that's how it's supposed to be anyway. They let some guys walk next year, and then Otito kind of like slides into, you know, like a quasi, you know, early on Justin Jones role, like kind of next year. I think that's sort of what you're eventually looking from him. Same number, by the way, I took his number. But we'll sort of see how this all plays out. But yeah, I think you're kind of just looking at him as depth this year. And if some guys get hurt or, you know, COVID comes back or whatever it is, then maybe he'll be forced to play. But I think this is very much a learning season from him, considering how much his potential is, but how rough he is as a prospect right now.
Steven, when you were doing the get to know you interview, was there any talk of Otito maybe being more suited for nose tackle or any nose tackle talk, or how did, I don't want to spoil your interview, but I was just curious if maybe they perceived him as a different kind of player.
Now, we talked more about him, just kind of his general skill set. I think you can be comfortable with him playing from the nose and playing from the three tech. So I think, you know, he's kind of penciled in there. I think, you know, in a pinch, maybe he could play over the tackle. I need to do a little bit of that at UCLA, but I think you're talking about a nose tackle. You're talking about a three tech. And, you know, I do feel really comfortable with his projection in terms of next year, right? Because Christian Covington's on a one-year deal. You know, we'll see about Morgan Fox, but again, different kind of skill sets. You know, Brain Fajoco's a free agent next year. Jerry Tillery's a free agent next year. Forrest Merrill, potentially still on the roster, I guess, in terms of practice squad. But Otito will definitely get his chance next year to make a strong impact. And I think having a season where he's not asked to do a ton is going to be so beneficial for him, because, you know, something we did talk about in our interview is that 2021 was the first time ever in his life that he has been able to truly focus on football in the springtime, because he was always doing shot put at UCLA. So this current spring was the first time ever in his life where he's had nothing else but football to focus on. And so now you're talking about a player who has this whole, you know, season to learn and progress and maybe play, you know, because we saw Chris Rumpf play like five snaps a game, essentially. I think you're talking about a very similar snap workload for Otito, and then maybe you start him in a couple games in a pinch. You play him, you know, 20 snaps if there's some injuries in front of him. So yeah, I'm sure people will really want to see him on the field, and I really want to see him on the field, but I think you're talking about your sixth defensive tackle essentially, and so you're not going to see him a ton. But I think next year, after he has a full season to kind of adjust to the NFL speed, adjust to the scheme, adjust to not doing shot put in the spring, I think next year as a sophomore, you could potentially see a really good season for him. Of course, relative to, you know, to a nose tackle, of course.
Yeah, so Rumpf had 176 snaps in 17 games, but there were games of 3, 7, 3, 8, and then games of 31, 25, and that's all just injury-based.
Yeah, because he played like 30-something against the Bengals, which was by far his best game. And, you know, he played a little bit more against Houston, obviously. So I think you're looking about a very similar strategy for Tito this year. You know, play him sparingly. Obviously, he's not going to play special teams as much as Chris Rumpf did, but, you know, he's going to be your sixth defensive tackle. He's going to make some impact here and there, start in a pinch or play 20 snaps in a pinch, you know, and I think you feel comfortable with him being that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Side note, I didn't realize Rumpf didn't register a single defensive snaps in week 18 against the Raiders.
Really? Not one?
Not according to Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, I think you can play him in a pinch if injuries happen. We could play him on special teams. We saw the Fajoco Houston game, right? So you can throw a big guy out there and have some success. But yeah, no, I think this is a year where Otito should just sit back, learn. You have a real football coach now as opposed to Chip Kelly. So one of the most prepared in the game as opposed to one of the most stupid motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life. Let him chill. And then next year is the breakout year for Tito.
Yeah.
Okay, man, what if Chip Kelly was the front runner to coach the 76ers? Would you take him or Doc Rivers?
I would not watch basketball anymore.
Yeah, you know, I think Tito's gonna love not having to drop into coverage or drop into a quarterback spy anymore, because that's what you say would ask him to do like five times a game. I'm like, what are we doing here with a 340-pound nose tackle? My goodness. All right, let's talk about Jamari Sawyer, the Chargers' sixth round pick, pick number 195. Obviously won a national championship at Georgia, had a fantastic pass blocking efficiency rating with 99.1. Only allowed four pressures on the season as an offensive tackle in the SEC, which is amazing. Crazy. One sack allowed, five penalties. I think two of those were declined, if I'm not mistaken, from PFF. RES was 4.15. We did not rank him on our composite rankings, but I think his general composite board was pretty, you know, fantastic. And we'll talk a little bit about him here. So mm-hmm. I think by far this is the rookie that has the most possible outcomes for yep. this team, for this class. Obviously he could potentially start, he could potentially get a redshirt season. You know, there is kind of that knee issue that was pointed out to us after the draft and how he couldn't mm-hmm. squat anymore. But so he's another one. Maybe you give him the Brendan Hymus treatment and you don't really see him as a rookie. Maybe you give him a chance to start at one of the guard spots and he earns that position. So this by far to me is the most complicated situation, but you know, we all love this draft pick. So I guess it's just kind of what we're expecting for from his rookie season.
Yeah, that's basically it. Like you said, the largest range of outcomes, I have no idea. So I believe he's a left guard right now in camp, which is expected. That's not unexpected, but that was just rookies. I totally think he can start. I think, again, my conspiracy is that Filer is just working out a reworked-ish contract so he can play right tackle. You know, give him a little bit of a extra bonus for doing them a solid. But to me, I do think inevitably he is not a starter this year, barring injury. And I do think he is going to have a nice role as that extra offensive lineman. But I think it's just going to be a 100-snap kind of year from him. 100 snaps, because I think there's a good chance there's just one start in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think we also, one of the things we have to mention is just sort of his medicals also a little bit, right? Like that was sort of uncertain coming out of the draft. We don't think that he has a current injury now by any means, but like that could kind of change on a day-to-day basis as he like starts playing in practice or starts playing at camp. So I think that's something to watch for this season. But no, I don't think he gets on the field this year, but it's so uncertain and murky what they're doing at right tackle that like you could tell me that he ends up being one of the guards, or Jaimez ends up being one of the guards, or depending on if they kick Filer out there, or you could tell me that they sign a completely new right tackle off the street tomorrow to be the new guy. I wouldn't be shocked by that either. So there's just so many possibilities, and definitely the draft pick with the most variance in terms of outcomes, like Steven said. But I don't think he starts this year. I think sort of in the vein of Otito, although I think Otito will be on the field more just because of the nature of the position. I think Jamari is pretty much taking a redshirt year, barring injuries to other players.
So I guess really the question here is if your swing into your offensive lineman is a competition between Brendan Hymus and Jamari Sawyer, you know, who wins that competition and how many games do they play? Obviously, you know, your starting guards it's so hard to keep all of your five offensive linemen healthy. So whoever is that swing into your offensive lineman, whether it's Hymus or Sawyer, will play and will start games this season. It's just a matter of, you know, who wins that competition. Is Sawyer healthy? Do they feel like he needs a medical redshirt season as opposed to just straight up, hey, like we want to take it slow with him, adjust to the NFL like they did with Brendan Hymus? Because I think that's a different conversation. But I think if I know that Jamari Sawyer is healthy, then I think I would much prefer Sawyer playing over Brendan Hymus.
I agree, but only because I've watched one of these players that I really like him. Yeah. But you have more experience watching these guys, so I'll trust you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just, based on the film, prefer watching Sawyer right in that role. But also, I feel like the NFL does have its kind of growing process with players. So if they go, well, this player's been in our system for 1 year, this player, you know, in terms of Jaimez, maybe is more ready to start now, I think that could be a line of reasoning. But you know, there was a reason that they doubled down on guard in this draft when they saw the value in Salier. So, I wouldn't take anything off the table for sure.
Yeah. And as, you know, Tyreek points out, they could certainly, you know, get all these guys in camp. Maybe at that point, you kind of are uncomfortable with the right tackle situation. So maybe at that point, you can give Dennis Kelly, Riley Reiff a call. Maybe at that point, you bring in Darrell Williams. So I think that is certainly a possibility. And if they do sign a right tackle, then I think that obviously pushes Salier down the board a little bit. So I think if you're talking about like his best case scenario for me, it's like, am I mentioned as a swing into your offensive lineman, maybe a Kevin Dotson type of player. You know, obviously the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2020 did so much quick game that, you know, their pass blocking numbers are extremely skewed. And Dotson only allowed one pressure as a rookie, which is absolutely bonkers in five starts because, you know, they just were not dropping back at a high level. But, you know, if you really look at it, he was kind of a mid-level guard in those kind of games. And, you know, I remember watching him when I was watching Matt Filer, and I feel comfortable with that, like, physical and ability comparison. Obviously not expecting Salier to allow one pressure in five games because the Chargers actually do real passing concepts in the NFL, unlike the Steelers did in 2020.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anyone? Bueller? All right. Let's move on here to Jaw Taylor then.
So that's right. He goes by Jaw.
Yeah. He does go by Jaw. So everybody who's listening to this, he goes by Jaw, not just here. So take that for what it's worth. 2021 by the numbers, as Tyler has here, 55 tackles, 16 run stops. Oh, assume that's a typo. This man set a record for missed tackle percentage, 173.2. Is that 17.2 or is
wow.
that
17.2.
I guess JT Woods isn't the only one who needs to work on his missed tackle percentage. Like, we got a situation over here.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Anyways, he allowed 5 touchdowns, had 5 interceptions and pass breakups. RAS was 8.31, and again, we did not rank him. So I think it's safe to say we don't really project a huge role for Jaw Taylor. I think he's probably your version of Ryan Smith, if Ryan Smith had ever been able to stay healthy. You're talking about probably a special teams gunner, core special teams player, and maybe your fourth or fifth corner if people are injured, but I do not really expect Taylor to play a ton as a rookie.
Yeah, I just don't see maybe a nice special teams role. I think he's an emergency returner for them. Otherwise, it's going to be sub package, roster bubble, you know, maybe blitz, you know, 3 pressures in there somewhere randomly, 10 tackles, but solid special teams piece. Don't see him do anything much this year.
Yeah, don't see it either. Could see it going forward in 2023 or something like that, but pretty much core special teamer. I think you kind of replace him as Ryan Smith as the gunner, or he just plays special teams in general. And then if a couple DBs go down, then you could like theoretically start to see him get into the game a little bit. But no, I think he's almost special teams exclusive.
Which of you typed the Rex Burkhead thing?
Me.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious.
It's 13.2. I copy pasted JT Woods' categories into here, and I didn't delete the seven. So 13.2. Still not great, but better than 173.2.
slightly. No, but I think there's some things to like here in terms of a special teams projection, of course. And then if he becomes more than that, fantastic. Okay, we won't spend a ton of time on Dean Leonard. Frankly, I would be very surprised if he makes the roster because of the other players in that cornerback room. Mm-hmm. But 2021 by the numbers, 40 tackles, 11 run stops, missed tackle percentage of 14.3, two touchdowns allowed, seven interceptions and pass breakups. Combined RES was 7.68. So he is more of an outside corner projection as opposed to Taylor, who's a little bit more of a slot, potentially safety hybrid, according to some people online. But I don't know, like, am I the only one here that thinks Dean Leonard probably is a practice squad guy, or do you guys think he makes the roster?
I think if they have him playing some sort of safety, it's possible. If they just want to punt Alohi Gilman into the sun, then potentially as a versatile, right, as a versatile corner slot. Like, I think he is better suited as a safety immediately. I don't know. I just, this is the biggest reach of the Telesco era since 2016, as far back as the data goes. It's tough to project him making the roster, just given all their other guys. He's battling out for Tavon Campbell, though, so it is possible. I just don't see him being more valuable right now than Tavon Campbell, which I know is a whole thing for Chargers fans. But Tavon Campbell was a starter, was not great. But I think what he provides is more than what Leonard will provide as a backup.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot to say here other than we just said Ja Taylor is not going to play that much, and Dean Leonard's going to play even less or potentially not make the roster and be on the practice squad. So, like, he's kind of behind a guy who's behind a guy who's behind a guy at this point. But yeah, I think he could make the roster in an instance where they just decide, hey, maybe we're throwing out both Mark Webb and Alohi Gilman, and we're just going to put him there. Like, in theory, I guess it's possible. But no, like, I just don't see a role for him really on the roster in general. And even if he does make the roster, he's certainly not getting any kind of playing time. And you sort of already have John Taylor for the special teams value corner. Pretty much exclusively developmental guy. See where he is next year.
I mean, if you're talking about, like, best case scenario for him, obviously, you know, he earns a roster spot in training camp. And I think, you know, certainly that is possible. Tavon Campbell, definitely not a world-beating kind of corner. But if you're keeping six corners, if you're keeping four safeties, then there's going to be players who are the odd men out. And, of course, I would tend to think that would be Alohi Gilman and Dean Leonard. So just kind of depends, I guess, if he really is able to beat out Tavon Campbell for that fifth or sixth spot. But I think, you know, they like Campbell, and they like him as a fourth corner or a fifth cornerback option. And I think that's fine. Like, if you're asking him to be a CB1 against Justin Jefferson, then obviously that's not going to go well. But if you're talking about a cornerback room that added J.C. Jackson, hopefully gets Asante Samuel Jr. healthy, added Bryce Callahan, then Tavon Campbell as your fifth corner is completely fine. Like, there are not many other cornerback rooms in the league that have, like, a stud CB5 that they feel great about. So for the most part, NFL teams stack up these developmental guys that they feel comfortable starting in a pinch, or being a CB3 in a pinch. And so I think that is, you know, Tavon Campbell. But if they pick Dean instead of Campbell and they roll with Ja Taylor as CB5 and Dean Leonard as CB6 because they were the drafted players, then I think that's fine. NFL is lit asking about Keymon Hall. I think Keymon Hall is definitely gone at this point. You have too many slot guys at this point for Hall to really have a chance, in my opinion. So really, for me, in the last spot in the cornerback room is Campbell or Dean Leonard.
Yeah, and we're not far from Tavon Campbell. Like, they benched Michael Davis, $10 million a year, and Asante Samuel Jr., second-round picks in back-to-back games for Tavon Campbell. So, I mean, again, maybe things went south, and they did for Campbell. Maybe things went south in the eyes of the coaches, but there was a point where he was, like, they wanted him on the field really bad over guys they invested a lot in. So I just, even though he is older, he'll be 30 or whatever, I just, I still think they're going to keep him over Leonard at this point.
Yeah, and one of these Charger scouts has to be Canadian or something, man, because they have stacked up like 8 Canadian players, which I think is so cool, but also like, where did this come from?
Yeah, also like they have so many Canadians on the team now that we had to start a separate channel in our Discord to talk about Canadians and stuff. Like there's too many Canadians on this team. Someone's gotta fix this. But I think D. Leonard, we'll see if he makes the roster or not. But
yeah. Yeah, there was a sneaky pick, a Notre Dame pick here. It was Dean Leonard.
Because from Notre Dame High School or something like that?
Yeah, so people thought that Telesco didn't pick anybody from Notre Dame. He did. It's Notre Dame High School.
Yeah. Now, luckily, we replaced the Notre Dame fix with a Georgia fix, which is, I think, much better thanks to Brandon Staley. So I'll definitely take that. All right, we'll wrap this up with some fullback talk with Xander Horvath. Was kind of a running back fullback hybrid last year for Purdue. Tom Telesco threw out a Mike Allstott comparison, which I think is outrageous considering how good Mike Allstott was back in the day. But hey, you know, whatever floats your boat. So 2021 by the numbers, he had 319 rushing yards, 3.5 yards per attempt. He had 108 receiving yards. Yards after contact per attempt was 2.78. 3 touchdowns, 1 fumble, a damn near perfect RAS. I assume that's that as a fullback or is that as a running back?
That's a good question.
Oh, Jacob Bruin pointed out that Eamon Ogbogmamiga went to Notre Dame High School with Dean Leonard.
Oh.
There we go. What a question from Thomas.
Listen, yeah, so the question from Thomas is, let's be honest, did you show Horvath's shirtless pro day photo to your significant others, and did you immediately go work out after? You know, listen, I'm taking my fiance to Hawaii in a couple of weeks, so I don't need to work out. I'm good.
Question. I actually have not seen Xander Horvath's shirtless pro day photo.
Can you find it and pull it up?
Replace your nerd slideshow. We just have to get into this on the show. The
shirtless pro day photo. This is the content that people come here for, a shirtless picture of the Chargers fullback.
Look, if you've been here for an hour and a fucking half talking about all these guys, that some of them which won't play, we can talk about Xander Horvath's photo.
I will say it's certainly...
the guy's completely jacked up, man. It's crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean,
did you find it yet?
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, so I mean, going back to Xander Horvath and serious analysis, I think
it's coming up right now.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
Okay.
Look at that man's traps, dude. And his. You got to make it like full screen, though.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with. Let's go with this one.
At least one of my fellow Alexes is jacked. I'm not anywhere near this, so
it's okay. You know, you have brain muscles.
I suppose there sometimes.
Go. There's Xander Alexander Horvath for you, everybody.
There we go.
What was Alex's reaction?
Well, I don't know what my reaction was. I'm just tired. But overlooking his shirtless pictures of Xander Horvath on the podcast. Wow.
We're just going to stare at this for 20 more minutes.
All right, get the presentation back up here. Let's get back to our nerdy shit. Or take it off in general. That's fine, too. All right, so... you know, I think in terms of these post Isaiah Spiller picks on day 3, I think you're talking about Horvath potentially leading them in snaps, which is completely fine. I think you're comfortable with him being the Chargers fullback at this point. You know, obviously Gabe Neighbors is going to get cut because they drafted Xander Horvath. I think you're talking about 10 to 15 snaps a game, a couple carries here and there, a couple catches here and there. So he's not going to necessarily, like, I'd be pretty surprised if he ends up with 400 yards from scrimmage and 3 touchdowns. Right. But, you know, maybe he gets, you know, 100 yards from scrimmage or 100 yards rushing, 50 yards catching, couple touchdowns. But I think his main impact is going to be as a blocker, you know, be that fullback that they've kind of missed since Derek Watt left the team, and be a core special teams player for them and use that shredded physical profile to make an impact on special teams.
I love how he's this massive physical specimen, and it is as a running back, the RAF score. Yet he's got 3.5 yards per attempt, and his yards after contact average is less than Isaiah Spiller, who's like...
Well, you're probably not talking about somebody who gets, you know, a ton of like 25, 30-yard gains or explosive runs or anything like that.
Probably not, although the RAF score indicates it's possible.
Yeah.
I
think it's a really tough one to project in terms of like how many snaps and how many games he plays, because Gabe Neighbors was the roster's fullback last year and most of the season he was inactive, right? Like, obviously they want to get Xander Horvath involved, that they use the draft pick on him. But they might be keeping four running backs as is. So, I mean, in theory, like, that's possible. So that kind of murks up what Xander Horvath's like role would be on this team. But yeah, I mean, look, he's going to be replacing Gabe Neighbors. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. I would be shocked if they kept Gabe Neighbors over him or put one or both of them on the practice squad and just didn't keep a fullback. So he's going to be getting, you know, that usage in the offense. But, you know, it's hard to come up with any like stat predictions for him.
Sure.
Just because I don't even know what Gabe Neighbors' stats were this year. I'm sure Tyler could spend time looking at this on Pro Football
Reference. They're not great.
If you really wanted to. but I assume Xander will be above that. But yeah, I mean, really, Isaiah Spiller is really like the only rookie offensive player I think you can make any like real projections for at this point.
Yeah, Gabe Neighbors, 3 attempts for 8 yards, 3 receptions for 7. So 6 total touches for 25 yards.
That's 2.67 yards per carry, more than I thought he had.
Yeah.
He thought he just had straight up 0.
They did try to feature him in like the Kansas City Chiefs game and, you know, whatnot.
Tried.
The tough one for me is how much of a blocker he's going to be, because he just was not used as a blocker much, at least that last, I think the last 2 years for Purdue. I think all 3 years combined, he's under 100 run blocking snaps in 3 years at Purdue. So I don't know. It's tough to project with him.
What's his briskets per happy roommate per capita?
Hopefully more than Gabe Neighbors, I think.
Well, he's got, Justin has Tito now, who's apparently a world-class baker and chef. So they've filled that void for him. He doesn't need to rely on Gabe Neighbors for any brisket needs.
So Tito's a world-class chef, baker, lawyer in training, and NFL football player.
And apparently somebody who turned down an appearance in the Olympics to play football.
Okay, so maybe I shouldn't show my fiance pictures of Tito, because he sounds like a very complete, amazing human being.
He does. He does. All right, guys. Any final thoughts on this rookie class?
Nope. Just can't wait to see them all go out there and perform. Oh, what are we doing? Can't wait to see them all go out there and perform. These are our rookie projections based on things that we looked at, film, what we know, roster construction. I'm sorry to the positivity police for not saying Isaiah Spiller would have 4,000 yards and 82 touchdowns, but we try our best to be realistic.
Hey, man, but we still said that we feel very good about his rookie season. And so I feel like this was a good exercise in terms of, you know, outlining some expectations for these players. And obviously, you know, anything can happen. Maybe Tito is just kind of a world beater and could potentially, you know, beat out even Jerry Tillery for that third defensive tackle spot. I don't know, but I doubt it. I guess I look like Al from Home Alone or Home Improvement.
I guess. I mean, you're white. You have a dark hair and a beard.
Yeah.
At least he's white, man. The Kyle Van Noy thing, as Kyle Van Noy is half black, still makes no sense to me, but it is what it is. All right. So we will wrap the show up here at this point. So appreciate all of you guys who tuned in to an hour and a half of rookie projections and Morgan Fox conversation. So,
Wait, what are we watching now?
This is Alan from Home Improvement.
Alan from Home Improvement.
Oh.
I'm
still buffering for me. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dark hair and a beard, black guy. Like, no. That's it.
You don't look anything like him.
Yeah, I don't see that at all, but it's all good.
I don't even think I look like Tim Allen, but I can do the you know, that voice, but I don't know.
Seen a lot of questions about Odell Beckham Jr. The answer is no. He's injured right now. So,
yeah, so someone has said we missed a super chat. It is from Carter, OBJ. Okay. No, don't think so. Chargers have mostly avoided injury problems. And
it'd be fun, but I don't know if his knees work.
Yeah, like I think if people were confident around the league in his ability to be healthy, he'd be signed right now. But he's not. So, you know, he's probably not. I mean, he tore his ACL in February. So even if you're talking about a aggressive 6 month recovery, you're talking about somebody starting a game at halfway through the season.
Yeah, I just don't.
If somebody's injured, then sure. But
yeah,
if everybody's healthy, I don't see a role for him.
If they were as in on wide receiver at 17 as the league would have us believe, then maybe they'll pick him up. But otherwise, they seem to be good with the guys they have.
All right. So apologies to Carter for missing that. But hey, we got to it eventually. And shout out to Demetrius for pointing that out. So, all right. That's going to do it for us today, guys. We will see you next time for we'll probably do a Q&A on Saturday. And then we're going to have a couple more episodes before we take a little summer break. So appreciate everybody tuning in and chatting here. And as always, remember to sign up for our YouTube memberships, which is a new feature that we've kind of started. We'll have some exclusive YouTube membership videos coming out in the next few weeks or so, and that will continue throughout the season. So appreciate all of the support, all of the positive feedback, and bolt up. We'll talk to you guys later.